Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 102.5. The game streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, and YouTube, thanks to the law offices of Amanda Gentry. TD is in the house. Teron Davenport, the TD Power Hour, presented by Freedom Tire Guys and Crane Works and Rental Works. FreedomTireGuys.com, Nashville's premier mobile tire company, online at FreedomTireGuys.com. Crane Works and Rental Works, your source for crane and equipment rental. Visit CraneWorks.com. TD, how are you today?
What's going on?
So, first of all, we should say national radio superstar Teron Davenport, because I'm driving around Friday night, and I'm just, you know, I've always got my radio on 102.5, as everybody should always have that on it, and I'm listening, and I'm hearing TD with Freddie Coleman, and I'm like, man, TD is killing it. So I'm glad to have TD with us. Now, Seattle, TD. We talked to you on Sunday from Seattle on the pregame show, and I was saying to you, what happened to Taylor Lewan? What happened to Jayon Brown? What's this team going to do? They got embarrassed week one. They're playing the Seahawks, and we all know what happened Sunday. So the Titans are sitting at 1-1. Big opportunity with Indianapolis and their issues with Carson Wentz today. And I want just kind of your thoughts on how you see the Titans right now after two games, admitting, obviously, that it is still early September football.
Yeah, well, like you said, it is early September football, but I think you're seeing a team reclaim their identity, and that was something they really weren't able to do against the Cardinals in the season opener. I mean, they had the physicality taken to them, but then you saw them turn around in Seattle, which, mind you, is a very hostile environment. They were able to go in there, and when it was time to turn things around, right, maintain, or not even maintain, but take hold of and then maintain that momentum, they went to Derrick Henry. And that's their identity. Derrick Henry running the football is their identity. They went to that despite being down by two scores in the fourth quarter. Derrick Henry, I think it was like 13 carries, 103 yards, two touchdowns in the fourth quarter. And that just lets you know where they're going when they want to win the football game. And in my opinion, that identity is very, very unique. Now, one team that does have a similar identity to that, maybe not as successful, as the Colts, and we could get into that later, but I just think it was really good for them to just, again, re-show what it is that they're about offensively. Now, defensively, there were some mistakes, but I think they were able to just fly around. Like, once they started going to dime and you brought in David Long and Dane Cruikshank, you had speed all over the field. They were flying to the football and making plays, and that, again, is a part of the physical nature that this team aims to play with.
Did it feel to you, Jason Fitz said yesterday on the show, he felt like that the Titans through the first six quarters of the season looked like a team that didn't practice as much, looked like a team that didn't play in the preseason, and that eventually when they really got their real legs under them was in the second half of that Seattle game. Do you buy that?
I mean, it's, I guess you could say that. I don't think they weren't in condition. Like, they were fine condition-wise. I think really it was just chemistry-wise and just
playing the game.
They just got it taken to them, man. And I don't know if they practice. Because, look, the defense, right, the defense played in the preseason. The defense, you know, practiced for the most part. Everybody outside of Danico Autry, they were on the field. So, I mean, can it apply to one and not the other? I don't know. So that's why it's hard for me to say that. I think, end of the day, they just got the business taken to them by Arizona.
What did you make of the offense and kind of the way that they played on Sunday against Seattle? Because, I mean, everybody can talk about Derrick Henry all day, and I am the first one who enjoys doing it. Tannehill threw for 350 yards, basically. And he did that with A.J. Brown having one of the worst days of his career, and you're not going to probably see that anytime soon.
Not like
Julio Jones was fantastic. You know, it looked like the offensive line kind of found their, you know, their rhythm a little bit, even with a backup in Sambrylo in there and Brewer having to play a little bit. And then, you know, they threw the ball to Mykole Pruitt, which, I mean, I think we all saw when he got released by San Francisco. I don't know about you, but I was like, bring Mykole Pruitt back. And I feel like the offense showed in the second half of that Seattle game that they're going to be a Derrick Henry team, but that Tannehill's going to get the ball around, and that's exactly what he did on Sunday as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's something that was very critical for them to be able to turn around. And when you got a guy like Derrick Henry, you know, and you could give him the football and have him do it what he did, you always have a chance to win. I mean, that's the way I look at it, period.
Did you think that the Titans maybe learn their lesson from week one. Because here's the one thing that I will say. And I was not ready to get on the Todd Downing stinks train after 1 week. Because, I mean, there were some media people, but a lot of the fans, and I'm sure you got a lot of that too, TD, about people that were just like, you know, Downing was awful in week one, and Downing doesn't know what he's doing, and Downing got rid of the play action, and Downing. And I just kind of look at a play caller and I say, you know, if we're going to live this life where, okay, if they don't score points, play calls were bad, and if they do score points, play calls are good, then you're almost taking away the talent of the players. And I felt like it was unfair to just throw Downing under the bus for week one. The one thing that I feel like he did, and maybe it was Vrabel saying, hey, this is what we're going to do if we end up in this situation, was for a lot of coordinators, it would be very easy down 24-9 or down 30-16 in the fourth quarter to say, hey, you know, put Jeremy McNichols in the game. Let's start throwing the football. Let's try to all get it back right here. And in this game, Todd Downing didn't do that. He stayed with Derrick Henry, and he stayed with the play action. And I just don't think, you know, for as much as people were talking about Downing getting away from the play action in week one, they're not discussing what he stayed with in week two.
Well, what you have to do is look at down and distance. And you can't just, like, you have to look at the game overall, right? And I will say there were multiple times in the first game where, okay, you know what? Don't run Derrick Henry first play of the series. You know, they know it's going to happen. Then you get into second and third and long, and now your playbook's condensed. What he did very well in this pass game was he mixed it up a little bit more, and it wasn't just running the football. You were getting favorable situations in second down and then third down, and you could open things up a bit. And then also, I will say this, that game, and some people will point to the Jaguars game where he set the record, it was like 223 with the 99-yard touchdown, and say that was his best game. I personally think this game that he just played was Derrick Henry's best game as a pro. And I said that to him after the game. Why? Because he was involved in all phases of the game. Anytime I get into, like, somebody asked me who the best running back in the game is, I'm saying Derrick Henry. And, you know, we could argue about it all you want or debate it and all you want. But the argument that a lot of people give is him catching the football and him in third down situations, right? Pass pro. Well, he stonewalled Jamal Adams multiple times. He caught six passes for 55 yards. Two of them were screens. The rest were just, as Ryan Tannehill said yesterday, just taken as they sunk their coverage to stop stuff down the field. He was open for them. So I think that game was an excellent example of how his game is progression. And it's good to see because these are things, you know, when you've been out there in training camp, you saw him up and down the field working with Tony Dews, catching the football every day during individual period. You know, they're doing those pass pro drills. Now they're carrying over, and you're finally seeing those results show.
Well, I saw during the offseason, you know, Derek post some of his workout videos. But Derek, I think we all know that when you see 10 seconds of Derrick Henry working, there's probably like, you know, 5 hours that day that you didn't see. And one of the things that he was doing in his offseason workouts, and I think he was in Dallas, was he was at SMU's indoor practice facility working with his trainer on running routes and catching the football. Mm-hmm. And he's still far from a finished product there. But I would argue that if Matt Eberflus, for example, is watching this tape Sunday and thinking, oh, no, now I got to deal with this too. Like, now I got to deal. And there's one thing about great players, you know, like the truly great players, and that is that if you devise a game plan to stop somebody, good luck. Like, everybody who plays a great player goes into the game saying, we can't let Peyton Manning beat us. We can't let this great player beat us. And every team, I mean, Pete Carroll said after the game, TD, that their game plan was to stop Derrick Henry. And at halftime, they were probably feeling pretty good about it. Mm-hmm. But I thought Derrick was running the ball pretty well, even though he only had 40 yards. Because the yards he was getting, I kept saying, that's the hardest 35 yards I've ever seen.
Yeah, and, I mean, they were tough, hard yards, but the fact of the matter is, as the game wore on, you could just see those carries is becoming more and more effective. And then shout out to A.J. Brown with that sealed block. He sealed that edge. Henry went off of it, and he did what he does. And I think when you look at those type of things, and them being able to do that with Roger Saffold going out, right, and Luan already being out, that's a testament to Keith Carter, you know, for having those guys, for having Aaron Brewer ready, for having Tyson Braylo ready. It's a testament to them, too, for being ready. But I think it's another opportunity to praise Keith Carter for the work that he's doing. And that offensive line, I'm not going to say they didn't miss a beat, but they were still very effective with Henry running the ball late in the game.
I wonder how much of that's Keith Carter. I wonder how much of that is.
Oh, a lot of it is Keith Carter.
If you,
you go to practices, you will see a lot of the things that they work on, and you will see how that transfers to game. A lot of that is Keith Carter. I'm not going to let you sit here and yell and scream before about firing him, but then now that the offensive line is playing well, you see you're not that sure how much of it is.
I gave Keith Carter credit in 2019 when I wanted him fired in the middle of the year, and then the offensive line played significantly better. What I will say, though, is nobody threw Keith Carter under the bus for week one, and I thought the offensive line was good, but I think sometimes Derek makes that line better.
I mean, that's what you could say for any outstanding back. But at the same time, you know, there are times where those holes are legit opened by that offensive line. So, I mean, there's back and forth with it.
But I don't think this is like Mike Munchak, though, where they could just take backups.
Jared, and see, this is your issue, and this is what I have an issue with. You go so extreme. Mike Munchak is a Hall of Fame coach. Come on, stop. That's ridiculous.
Well, he's not a Hall of Fame coach. Hall of Fame player, but he's a great
Hall
coach.
Of Fame level coach.
He was a
great
coach.
If you want to engage in splitting hairs, we could do that. Understand what it is I'm saying. The fact of the matter is, you don't always have to go so far to an extreme.
No. I think Keith Carter's fine. But I think that if you can keep, like, if you got a $15 million left tackle and he gets hurt and the running back still runs for 2,000 yards, or you lose, you know, a $16 million, whatever Conklin's making, right tackle, and you can lose guys in and out of the lineup, and some days that your line doesn't block very well, you know, like, it, to me, I just think that you put Derrick Henry on any team in the league, put him on Pittsburgh, where they can't block right now. And I still think Derrick Henry is doing Derrick Henry things out there because he's Derrick Henry.
It's a team thing. You know, I'm not going to say it's all Derrick Henry. It's not all the offensive line. And I get it. You know, you have your stands that you take, and you are irrationally unable to veer away from it. I get it. But the fact of the matter is Keith Carter is doing a solid job, a very good job with the offensive line. Right, wrong, or indifferent. And that's coming from someone who's there every day watching him work with those guys. He is doing an outstanding job with them.
I will have to agree to disagree.
We will agree. And mine is coming from a much more educated perspective. Let's put it that way.
I mean, you go to practice, but what do you see?
You go to practice and you see them working on different
techniques.
So who
are the bad coaches then? Who are the bad coaches?
I'm not going to say they necessarily have bad coaches. I'm not going to say they have bad coaches. All of their coaches are solid. And this is something that I always talk about, how much their drills that they do in practice transfer over to games. But again, being there every day, I can see that.
Every coach is good.
Every coach on that team is solid. I'm not going to say every coach is good. There are some that are better than others.
They got to have one bad coach. I can't believe that an NFL team would have just great coaches across the
league. See, and this is what you're doing again, the silliness. So you're going from good to great. I didn't say every coach is great. I said every coach is solid. And that's why sometimes talking to you is like talking to this glass on this window. You know what I mean? You have to be able to rationally have a conversation. I didn't say every coach on the staff is great. I said every coach is solid. And the reason why I'm saying that is because I like what I see as far as the drills transferring to games. And in some cases, the very drills that they do are transferring to big plays in games. That's impressive to me.
I just need them to not get, you know, have busted coverages for touchdowns like they did last week.
The busted coverages for touchdowns, those shouldn't happen. And remember what I said. Not every coach on that staff is great. Not every coach on that staff is good. But overall, they're solid. Then at the same time, if you preach over and over again, hey, listen, you got to communicate. This is a look. They're going to give you this combination. When they do that, this player's going here. This player's going there. Okay, coach, I got it. Okay, look, remember, in this situation, this is going to happen. And then you go out there, and the situation happens, and the player who said, okay, coach, I got it, doesn't get it. Is that on the player or the coach?
I mean, in that case, the players last year were saying it was on their communication.
No. I said, is that on the player or the coach? Let's focus on this one question.
Okay, say it again.
Oh, Lord have mercy. I said, if you go over a route, they do work on route combinations. Again, you got to go to practice to see these things. But they work.
Didn't open up 20 minutes, though. It's not like you're
Jared,
sitting there the
again,
whole
you have to go to practice to see these things because the DBs very much do, FYI, they work on route combinations during individual period when it's open. Okay? So you have like Chick Ejiasi, you have Stretch, you know, they put on the X or the Z or the Y jersey and they run the routes and they give them looks. These are things that do happen, but you have to go to practice to see that. So, yes. These are things that they do. They work on the route combos. Now, back to the question that I had.
Okay.
If, as a coach, each and every – if you continue to go over, okay, look, when they give you this look, this guy's going here, this guy's going there, you have to understand you're going to have to switch off or one of you is going to take here, one of you is going to take here. If you go over that consistently on the field, in the classroom, and then – the player says, okay, coach, I got it. When they go out on the field and it doesn't get executed, who is that on? Is that on the coach or is it on the player? Because the coach has gone over it ad nauseum.
It's on the coach. You know why? Because either you're
because
coaching
you don't
it,
want to say that the coaches are good. That's
either,
why. Come
no,
on, let's be real.
Because either
let's
you're
be
coaching it or you're allowing it to happen. And that is something Bill Belichick says. And at the end of the day, either you're coaching it or you're allowing it to happen. So that's okay. Like the fumbling issue. Like okay. If a team fumbles too much, it's like, is it the coach's fault that they fumble
too much? If you work on ball security over and over and over again, if you work on ball security, you have the sand-filled footballs and you teach the points of pressure and all that, and you consistently go over and the guy does it, is that really on the coach?
The coach is going to get fired, isn't he?
Not necessarily. Well, I mean, if you leave it up to you, yeah, you know, everybody should be fired. That's your fan like approach.
Name me a team that loses and then doesn't fire their coach. I mean, that the league
most,
is built
most,
on
yeah,
losing
one teams,
and you get
one,
fired.
When teams lose, they do fire their coach.
The coaches that don't get fired are Harbaugh in Baltimore because he wins, and Tomlin because he wins, and Belichick because he's won, and like that's the league. I do have a Derrick Henry thought I want to get to. We'll do that next. 615-737-1025 and the TD Power Hour presented by Freedom Tire Guys and by Craneworks and Rental Works. Be sure to check them out. FanDuel Sportsbook is my official sportsbook app. That's right. The biggest game of week 3 is Monday night, Philadelphia and Dallas, and FanDuel Sportsbook is about to make it even bigger because FanDuel Sportsbook gives new customers 30-1 odds on either team to win. That means you can end the NFL week right by winning $150 on a $5 bet. Dallas has looked good through 2 weeks, but I'm still going to go with Philadelphia because I believe more in Jalen Hurts. FanDuel is sports betting made simple, and they're always hooking you up with great offers. And when you win, you'll get paid in as little as 24 hours. Just sign up with the promo code JGM this week before Dallas takes on Philadelphia. You can win $150 on a $5 bet. Remember to use the promo code JGM so they know that I sent you exclusively on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. 21 and older and present in Tennessee. New users only. $10 first deposit required. Must wager in a designated offer market. Max bonus $150. Bonus for Tennessee users fulfilled in site credit within 72 hours. Tennessee site credit expires 14 days after retreat. Restrictions apply. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line 1-800-889-9789. TD Power Hour presented by Freedom Tire Guys and Craneworks. Teron Davenport with us. TD, I'm going to give you an analogy Joe Rexroth didn't like yesterday.
Okay.
I think, and I've been going through this. I've been going through this weird obsession with 90s basketball. Like
I saw that on Twitter. I saw that.
I don't care about regular basketball. Like you could say, hey, you know, Luka Doncic is. I don't care about that. But 90s, we can talk about.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Derrick Henry is the Michael Jordan of the Tennessee Titans. And Ryan Tannehill is the Scottie Pippen. And yes, I know quarterback is more important. You know, big picture football, quarterback is more important than running back. But the way that Derrick Henry takes over a game and the way that, like, Seattle knew. They knew that he could do what he did on Sunday. And he still did it. And it's like, you know, when they said, well, you know, Jordan, he's more of a dunker. He can't shoot. Okay, Clyde Drexler, here's 6 threes in the first half of game 1 of the finals. I think he's the Michael Jordan, and I think that you can win with that as your, like, a Super Bowl or compete. People will say you can't do it with a running back. I think you can do it with this running back because he's the Michael Jordan of the Titans.
Well, to further enhance your point, look at the fourth quarter, right? They were down by two scores. Who did they feed steadily, right? It was Derrick Henry. So I'm going to agree with you on the Michael Jordan of the Titans. He definitely is the one. And anytime you mention Derrick Henry, like you ask the coaches or even the player, they just say, well, that's our identity. You know, so, yeah, for sure. I'm with you on that. And Ryan Tannehill is a smooth Scottie Pippen. I like that analogy too. And together, obviously, these guys hope that they can win a championship. I think really it's going to come down to how can one or the other respond when one of them isn't having an outstanding game. That's really going to be the key to this team being able to win. And you look at the Bills, right? Your team, the Bills. You look at the Browns. You look at the Chiefs. You know, these are all teams, and the Raiders are easing their way into there. You're going to have to score a lot of points to beat these teams. So will you be able to do that if one aspect of your offense isn't hitting on all cylinders?
So I think that's a great point because last year in the Ravens game, they couldn't get Derek going. Yeah. And at that point, Tannehill has to be the guy. Now, he's got better weapons this year with Julio Jones than he had with Corey Davis. But like then Tannehill's got to be the one to pick up the slack. The one thing I worry about is that they're really Stockton and Malone – and not Jordan and Pippen, and Derrick Henry is Karl Malone. And Karl Malone was great, but Karl Malone couldn't win the finals. Now he had to beat Michael in order to do it.
Man, I couldn't stand Karl Malone.
I couldn't either, but that's because I was a Jordan fan. I do wonder, though, the path to the Super Bowl, because I think that Sunday's game, on the road, in that environment, with that quarterback, that's a playoff team. Mm-hmm. You know, if you go on the road to Buffalo or you go on the road – it's going to be as hard as that game Sunday. But that game Sunday is in that ballpark. I wonder, can you do that three times? You know, four times. Can you go on the road, if you have to, three times or two times in a Super Bowl, go on the road against, you know, Josh Allen 1 week, Lamar Jackson the next week, Patrick Mahomes the next week, Aaron Rodgers the next. Can you do that and have those two guys be able to kind of dictate their own terms and win you four games with a defense that's better than they were last year, but I don't think we believe they're going to be a great defense this year.
Well, Jared, honestly, this is why it's so important to break things down into, like, obviously you want to win the Super Bowl, right? But,
sure.
You know, you got to set goals going towards that. And you don't want to get in a situation where you got to go on the road three, four times. So you know what you do? You set your first goal, win the division. So that way you can host a game, and then you don't have to, you know, I think that's the best way to do it. And a lot of teams, they break it down even further where they break the season down into quarters, right? You got the first four games. Okay, let's go 4-0 this first week, and then so on and so forth. I think that's really the way to approach it. But the one thing that I do like, and this is something about the Colts also, that kind of I feel what Chris Sanders is saying about being a bit troubled about the game, because whenever you have an outstanding – or not even an outstanding – whenever you have just a stout defense and a rushing attack that is capable of just being force-fed to the opposing team, you have what I call a pack and play. It's just like back in the day, right? You had a kid and it was this little thing. You could just fold it up and carry it with you, and you unfold it, and you put the kid in there, and he's going – or she's going to be busy. It's called pack and play. And that's what this team has. They have a pack and play – style, mentality, mindset, and that, okay, you know, look at Seattle last week. Okay, they went on the road, and you know, having Derrick Henry, because let me tell you something. When Derrick Henry ran that touchdown, that 60-yarder, man, it was so quiet in there. It was quiet. So when you have the ability to – because that's like a knockout. Like, that's like a super uppercut. You know what I mean? And it just takes the whole – breath, everything out of the stadium. When you have that in your pocket to pull out, that is always going to give you a chance to win on the road. And then if you could back that up with some strong defense, which they had in the second half, you're a legitimate pack and play. And that was really the formula for 2019. That year, man, nobody wanted to see that team in the playoffs. Nobody wanted to see them, because they knew that because of their style of play, they were always going to be in the game. So it was really about, okay, look, we got to open it up. We got to get a lead against them so that way we could try to get them away from what it is that they like to do. So in my opinion, man, they're pack and play.
And the other thing, you brought up the defense. I was talking to Chris Sanders about this yesterday, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this. Because Pro Football Focus is saying, well, Bud Dupree's not getting any pressures and what. I feel Bud Dupree, and I feel DeNico Autry. Yeah. Like, when I just watched the games, I saw Russell running around. Yeah. And I could tell, and we talked all offseason, you know, how much is Autry going to help Simmons? Mm-hmm. And how much is Dupree going to help Landry? And I felt Russell Wilson running around. And Pro Football Focus can tell me whatever they want to tell me. There is a noticeable difference with those two guys on the field.
Yeah, I think it was Pro Football Focus. They also told you that Christian Fulton didn't have a really good game.
Listen.
and you know why?
Awesome.
Because they put that touchdown on Christian Fulton. Look.
Which one?
The Swain broken
down. The Swain one.
They
put that on
Fulton.
Right, so that ended up hurting his rating, but I mean, last time I checked, Metcalf was targeted 5 times and caught one, and I think it was like 8 yards. So, take it for what it's worth. Everybody,
Metcalf should have been kicked out of the game.
Yeah, because, you know, Fulton was getting in his head. I mean, he got multiple holds, personal foul, yeah. But, I mean, as far as after all that, I forgot the whole
Dupree and Autry.
Oh, Dupree, yeah. So, that was good that you said that, you know, as far as like being able to feel Autry, being able to feel Bud Dupree. That's an excellent point. And it goes to show, like, it's not just sacks that you use to grade a pass rusher. You know what I mean? And when you look at Dupree, if you look at that sack that Autry had, I think it was a combo one, Autry and Simmons, that bull rush that he had is what made Russell Wilson have to step up. And it was right there for Autry and Simmons to get the sack. So, absolutely, that's definitely something that you are starting to feel. And then remember, Dupree's not even 100%. Like, he could tell us that guy's not 100%. Like, there's still more distance that he has to put himself away from that knee injury. So, when you look at him and just what he's able to do coming off that edge, it's definitely going to help everybody.
TD's with us, the TD Power Hour, presented by Freedom Tire Guys and Crane Works and Rental Works. We'll get TD's thoughts on the Colts coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on Wentz, Eason, now Hundley, but also Jonathan Taylor and that Indianapolis defense. We'll do that coming up next. Are you struggling to find and retain good employees? We can help. Cromwell Media invites you to attend one of our 2 free recruitment and retention seminars hosted by Chris Stonick on October 5th or 6th. For the past 33 years, he has helped hundreds of companies find newer, more cost-efficient ways to recruit qualified employees. Learning a new recruitment strategy, enjoy a continental breakfast, and be eligible to win door prizes, go to thegamenashville.com/register for more info and to sign up. TD's with us. It's Stillman & Company on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Teron Davenport with us. The TD Power Hour is presented by Freedom Tire Guys online, freedomtireguys.com, and by Crane Works and Rental Works, your source for crane and rental equipment. Visit craneworks.com. TD, what do you think about the Colts, given the fact that Carson Wentz has not practiced these 2 days? That high ankle sprain sounds pretty bad.
Yeah.
And it's early in the season. Jacob Eason, their backup, is not taking the starters reps. Brett Hundley on the practice squad is. What do we make about the Colts? First the quarterbacks, then the rest of the team that most people think is pretty good.
Yeah, and a high ankle sprain, that's not something that you typically just bounce back from in 1 week like that.
It feels like you broke your ankle.
Right. And when you get that, and then it I hate to laugh, but when you look at the injury report, it says ankles, like plural. Like, that's just bad, man. It's a darn shame that Wentz has kind of been cursed by the injury bug. But with both ankles being bad, and this is a guy that at times, you know, is able to extend plays and move within the pocket and do those type of things to get those big plays down the field, that's taken away from him. And it's almost to the point where you want to force him to get on the move, you know, and see just how he's going to be able to operate on those bad ankles if he does play. Now, as far as Jacob Eason is concerned, if he makes his first start, look, Shane Bowen, you better focus on giving him one pitcher before the snap and a completely different pitcher post-snap. As far as rolling coverages and doing those type of things, this is a guy that will turn the football over if – you know, you're able to confuse him. So that's something that I would do there. And Brett Hundley, I mean, if he plays, then, look, Jonathan Taylor better be ready to carry the ball 40, 45 times. You know, and that's pretty much, in my opinion, their only chance to win. That rushing attack goes back to what we said about the pack and play, right? The strong running game and the strong defense. Jonathan Taylor is a certified workhorse, you know, so you could give him the football. But other than that, with those guys they got throwing, at quarterback, that team is extremely limited.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me, I told the story earlier today of a playoff game 15 years ago where the Titans went on the road to Baltimore. Jamal Lewis had run for 2,000 yards, but they had Anthony Wright at quarterback. And the Titans, you know, had a great run defense then with Haynesworth and Curse and Carter. Mm-hmm. But they just load the box, said, okay, like Jamal Lewis is not going to beat us. And I can't imagine, and I know that Quentin Nelson and those are some bad boys on the Indy offensive line. But, I mean, I think Autry and Simmons know exactly what they're getting themselves into. And I think guys like Rashawn Evans and Jayon Brown and David Long Jr., like I think that Vrabel's going to tell the front seven, hey, you guys got Jonathan Taylor because that's the one guy that could take over this game and keep the Titans from winning if really any of those quarterbacks play, given Wentz's injury and his inability to move around.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, Jonathan Taylor is the key to everything for them. And Nyheim Himes, we got to put him in there too because he's a guy that has killed the Titans. You go back to that game where they won here last season. I mean, it was Nyheim Himes was murdering them. You know what I mean? Catching the ball out of the backfield and running the football. So those two, they give him a fair shot. But, again, after that, it's just hard to see anything else playing in their favor. Obviously, the offensive line, right, with Quentin Nelson, Ryan Kelly. Braden Smith didn't practice, you know, so we'll see what happens there. But those two right there with Jonathan Taylor, that's always going to give you a shot.
What do you think, though, like last week on Sunday when we found out Taylor Lewan wasn't playing and Jayon Brown wasn't playing, I mean, we looked at, oh, my God, how are the Titans going to be able to beat Russell Wilson in Seattle? And the NFL has a way of humbling you very quickly. Mm-hmm. And I do wonder as far as Indianapolis's ability to compete with the Titans, given the limitations it feels like they'll have on offense this week.
Yeah, I don't – it's tough for me to see how they are going to be able to compete, just you know, keeping it real with you. Obviously, it's a divisional game. Again, you know, this is a physical football team, but I just don't think they're in a good mode to be able to compete with the Titans. But this is a team that's 0-2. They understand 0-3 would be almost murderous to their chances to win the division. So guarantee you they're going to come out, you know, and they're going to play as physically as possible. And that's something to expect. But at the same time, that's almost like inviting the Titans to fight the way that they want to fight. So for me, I don't really – and I'm not going to say there's not a chance, but I think this game is one that the Titans – really should win. And this is one of the ones where, you know how everybody says, like, hey, man, nobody respects the Titans, man. Like, you know, national level, they're always dissing the Titans. Well, I'll tell you why. A lot of times, these are the type of games that they lose. The Arizona game, right? Oh, nobody's respecting the Titans, man. Everybody's dissing the Titans. Then they go out and lose to the Cardinals at home in the season opener the way that they did. These are some of the reasons why people on a national scale just kind of overlook the Titans. And I think a win, like a convincing win, like what they should be able to do on Sunday, that will go a long way in changing that whole narrative.
Am I crazy? I said this the other day. I think this is the flip-flop version of the game against the Colts 3 years ago at the end of the season when Blaine Gabbert had to start at quarterback.
Yeah.
And it was like, look, if Derrick Henry runs Indianapolis out of the building, then maybe they've got a chance. But that Indy team with Andrew Luck at quarterback, and they were red hot, and they were good. And they came in here, and the Titans put up a fight. Jayon Brown had a pick six, and
Derrick tried.
But ultimately, they were never with Blaine Gabbert at quarterback going to compete with Indianapolis that day. I think this is the opposite. Like, I look at Indianapolis, and that's how I feel about this game.
No, that's a great point. It is the opposite of it because, you know, with Gabbert, you were obviously limited with what you could do offensively. And I think with Eason and with Hundley, you're limited. And even, you know, a Wentz that goes out there and tries to play, you're very limited. And one of the other things, right, because earlier we talked about, you know, I mentioned the drills carrying over to practice. Well, in ball security today, one of the things that the D-line was going over was just like extending and kind of like running that hoop, but stretching and reaching to knock the ball out of the quarterback's hands. One thing that Carson Wentz has worked on throughout his career was better securing the football in the pocket. And it's what he called the two-handed monster, right? He had to work on keeping two hands on the football. It's no coincidence that they're working on stripping the football. And that's just an example of what I say, you know, when I say these guys are good coaches. You know, Terrell Williams is a very good coach. And a lot of times in these practices, what we see, because I try to go over there and really, like, I try to listen to what it is that they're saying. And you hear them, you know, saying, okay, well, you know, this week so-and-so likes to do this, so we're going to work on this. That's where I say these guys are good coaches.
Well, and you know who probably knows Carson Wentz's issues holding on to the football? Jim Schwartz.
Yeah.
And I think that there's probably – that's kind of an element we haven't discussed about, you know, if Wentz does play. Get your questions in for TD. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. We're right to your Titans questions for TD. Teron Davenport is with us. The TD Power Hour right here, Stillman & Company. We're delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 1025 The Game. TD is with us for the TD Power Hour. Teron Davenport presented by Freedom Tire Guys, National's premier mobile tire company, online at freedomtireguys.com, and by Craneworks and Rental Works, your source for crane and equipment rental. Visit craneworks.com. Enough of me talking. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. I lied there. One more thing. How many of the techs in the text line are saying, get him, TD, get him, TD?
Most of them.
Okay. Yep. I was figuring that was most
An
of the text
overwhelming
line.
Majority of the text not surprised from the past by hour. That. And also tweets into the 1025 The Game Twitter account are very pro-TD. Hey,
those are not presented by
I'm a man of the people. I got to give them what they want.
Let's go right to the people here, Caroline.
Ben texts in and asks TD, what kind of trades can we facilitate midseason to take care of some of these issues that will not resolve themselves otherwise? Because even with the expected improvements as the season goes on, this team is not going to win the Super Bowl as is.
Hmm. Well, I guess you could look at a Zach Ertz trade. Like, that's something to still consider. Although, man, we didn't really get into it, but Michael Pruitt, that dude was a tone setter. He had that pancake. He drove Jamal Adams into the ground, and then he caught the pass and drew the personal foul, and then he caught another one on Jamal Adams. Like, he was a tone setter. So I want to see how that continues to develop, because we haven't gotten to see Ferkser in practice the last 2 days, so not sure what goes there. So the thing that pops into my mind immediately would be the tight end position, a Zach Ertz type. I could say that would be a trade that would help, but overall, I mean, for the most part, you don't really see too many mid-season trades that are the ones that just, like, put a team immediately over the hump.
The one thing I would say I do want to keep an eye on is when Sam Thicken returns. Hmm. I do wonder, because we saw when we were in Tampa, TD, he was kicking the crap out of the ball. And if they can go from what they've been kicking to a guy that you feel comfortable on 48 yards can get out there and drill it, that may make a big difference for this team.
Yeah, yeah.
The Canadian Titan texts in and asks TD, Derrick Henry is coming off of his best game as a Titan, in my opinion, particularly with the catches and his pass protection. Does this mean it's likely that the Titans will use him more on passing downs, or is McNichols still going to be that guy in 3rd and 5 or more?
That is an excellent question. And I asked Ryan Tannehill about that. Just like, is Sunday's performance a reason to kind of see spinning forward more opportunities for him? And he kind of quieted it down. He said there were two screens, but he also, that's when he got into just talking about how the coverage was sinking and it was just pretty much what was available to him. So I think it still should mean opportunities for Derrick Henry. I mean, me personally, like, I would never want to take that guy off the field, you know. So if you could get some type of contribution from him on pass pro, you know, third downs and catching the football and not be so predictable, I would keep him out there a little bit more. But you look at that 3rd and 18, right? Tannehill hit Julio Jones for a 15-yard gain, and then they had McNichols coming to the game. And that's a critical play, right? It was do or die, literally, right there. Fourth and three, and they were able to get that first down. But that one right there, I think, is really telling of what is going to be spinning forward. I personally, like I said, would get him more involved in the third down situation.
You know what I was thinking about, though, when we were talking about Derrick Henry and pass pro earlier, TD?
What's that?
Was, and I know they're not going to play Jamal Adams every week, but some of those blocks that he had of Adams and pass protection, those are harder hits than he takes when he's carrying the football.
Amen.
And And I do wonder if you're Mike Vrabel, if you say, you know, you want Henry out there, you know, on some of these third and eights where maybe he can help you catching the football, but also McNichols could help you too. But do you want Derrick Henry taking that hit from a blitzing linebacker? Would have to be something that would be in the back of his mind.
Yeah, I think end of the day, you just got to kind of just mix it in. I think he's definitely earned himself more opportunities, though.
Oh, sure. Especially like third and three, where like it's normally a passing down, but I could run Derrick Henry, the best back in the NFL, on third and three. That, I think, is going to be interesting where they go forward with that.
Yeah.
Dylan texts in and says, I believe if AJ didn't have those drops, he would have had 100 yards last week. Do we have a good chance to see 200-yard receivers and 100-yard rusher this weekend?
That's a good question. You're going to see a 100-yard rusher. I would almost put money on that. Matter of fact, that's what I wrote about for this morning. You know, Derrick Henry, the Colts in 3 years have given up 100 yards or more rushing three times. Guess what? Derrick Debo Henry has all three of them. So I would imagine they're going to do that some more. But at the same time, with them selling out to stop the run, and that's actually, I drew it up on Whiteboard Wednesday, them stacking the box and how they can run against it, but you could also play action off of that. I don't know if Xavier Rhodes is playing. So if Xavier Rhodes doesn't play, I talked to Mike Wells for talking with TD, and he was like, if TJ Carey starts, you know, Julio Jones and A.J. Brown, they need to be doing rock, paper, scissors, shoot to see who gets to go against them, because that's a matchup that you would want 9 times out of 10 as a Titans receiver. So I could see that happening. I mean, if they're able to – because this is one of those games where I feel like if they're able to get up on a lead, they're not going to scale back. They're going to keep loading and loading and loading, because this is a statement game, right? If they're able to win like a 42-7 type score, they're going to do it. So I could definitely see that happening.
Especially putting the Colts at 0-3.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the there was a handful of years ago, the Titans and the Ravens were in the same division, and the Titans started off 0-3, and the third game was at Baltimore. And I can just remember the fans chanting, 0-3. And that, you could feel like, okay, you're not, you know, competing at that level. And that's something I think that the Titans would love to send home to Indianapolis.
No doubt.
Andrew from Dover asks, TD, in your opinion, what do you think Henry needs to do to be considered an all-time great? A discussion that we've had throughout the week.
Honestly, keep doing what he's doing. I mean, because if you look at it, like if you think about it right now, since what, week 8? Or you can even go back to 2018, you know, since he went to see the Wizard, right, and talked to Eddie George. Like, since that point on to now, I mean, can you tell me a back that's better?
How many football players can you tell me that are better?
Right. You look at 2019, right, and the playoffs, right, they had Patrick Mahomes. They had Aaron Rodgers. You know what I mean? Aaron Rodgers. They had Derrick Henry up there. You know what I mean? Like he was up there with the quarterbacks. And then you look at the 2,000-yard season. I mean, quietly, that was, what, the fifth best season in the history of the NFL? Fifth best season. So I think all he has to do is keep doing what he's been doing. And for me, like, a Hall of Famer is a guy that you can say, like, look, this guy, when he was playing, was clearly the best ever. And if it wasn't him, it might have been this guy. But it was really this guy. And I think – over these last, you know, two and a half years, you could say that specifically about Derrick Henry.
I think, too, like we were talking about this in the media notes, you know, you'll see they'll have each player, you know, what they can accomplish. And like Kevin Byard, it's, you know, if he gets 2 or 3 more interceptions, he ties Michael Griffin, you know, in the franchise mark. And then you get to Derrick Henry, and it's like, can be the first running back ever to do this. Can be the first running back since Steve Van Buren in 1947 to do this. Can join O.J. Simpson, Jim Brown, Barry Sanders, Terrell Davis, and LaDainian Tomlinson with this. It's like, yeah.
And
you know, those are all-time greats.
You know what's so crazy about that? Like, how many times you're mentioning Derrick Henry with Eric Dickerson. Man, I loved Eric Dickerson, by the way. With Barry Sanders, with Walter Payton, whoever. And Mike Vrabel's still like, oh, well, that's just what Derrick does. You know, Ryan Tannehill, that's just what he does. That is just crazy to me that, you know, a guy is doing things along the lines of an LT, along the lines of these guys, and it's still like, oh, what? I mean, he's just doing this thing. That's what he does.
That's yesterday. Tannehill was asked if he's ever an off Derrick Henry. He's like, no, you know,
right. Just,
I'm like, hey, Ryan, I ship you back to Miami, and then you tell me if it's different that way.
Yeah.
Adam is up next here on with TD on the TD Power Hour. Thank you for calling. Thank you for waiting. Go ahead, Adam.
Hey, I kind of jumped in late, but TD, I know you're a big Elijah Molden guy. I've heard you talk about it for months.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a tough day. He got a couple of really crazy plays that he was involved in. I was curious if you think that's going to change his reps. Like, is he going to get more exposure? Are they going to slow him down because they're like, oh, my God, he can make plays like that? So I don't know. I still really like him, but yeah. I've seen some vulnerable moments from him for sure.
Absolutely. And that's a great point, Adam. And there have been some vulnerable moments. I like what Shane Bowen said just about him understanding how he matches up against particular guys, but also understanding where his help was. And if you go back and you look at that Tyler Lockett touchdown to Jarrett, you pointed this out earlier this week. He kind of panicked and he ended up tripping up the other defender, and then that's how Lockett got even more open. In my opinion, right, when you get beat like that, if you understand that your help is there over top, you're not going to panic the same because you know your brother got your back over top of you. That's a part of understanding where your help is. And one thing about playing that nickel position is you really have to have a thorough understanding of space, of the scheme, and where everybody is, so you know not necessarily that you could mess up, but you know that you have a little bit of leeway in order for things to happen because someone else is going to have your back. And I think that's really what it comes down to. Obviously, when you look at the other play, you know, the Christian Kirk touchdown, hey, I mean, look, the dude just made a play. It was a good play that he made, and that's just the way it works. But I think with time, he's going to get a better feel for all of that. And, I mean, you're going to have your mistakes as a rookie, right? You're going to have your bumps as a rookie, just as a veteran, period. And that's one of the things that Jack Rabbit Jenkins said. You got to understand that it's one play and not a full game. And I think that was an excellent point when he was asked about what he would say to Elijah Molden.
And I think the only way Molden gets better is by playing.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, that's the – and I think you do that with rookies. You put a rookie at tackle, it's going to happen. You just hope he doesn't get your quarterback killed.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that's the reality of the position. TD, who's on Talking with TD this week? You said Mike Wells previewing the Colts game. What else we got?
Yeah, we're pretty much cruising in season, right? Every week we want to have the ESPN NFL Nation reporter of the team that the Titans are playing. So Mike Wells, and we got Chris Sanders, of course, you know, run TMC. We'll keep that thing moving, and that's pretty much how the show works.
Talking with TD. TD, we'll talk to you on Sunday for the pregame show. As always, appreciate you, TD.
Yeah, for sure. Appreciate you both.
Yep, TD, national radio star, kind enough to do an hour with us on Thursdays for the TD Power Hour. Coming up next, Trevor Maddich. Trevor said something that I love Trevor.
Love Trevor.
I love Trevor. You would know this, Chris Sanders, TD, Trevor, Corey Curtis. Sometimes we disagree.
Oh, is that so?
Trevor said something that we need to discuss. We'll do that coming up next. Here on Stillman & Company, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game. TriStar Moving. Those are my official movers. If you're looking to move, and maybe you've got a company you like, maybe you don't, TriStar Moving should be on your list. Get a bid from my friends at TriStar Moving. When I moved, I didn't have a moving company that I loved one way or another. I went with TriStar Moving, and I am so thankful I did. Their owners, Garrett and Robert, are true Nashvillians at TriStar Moving, and they are dedicated to making sure that you get five-star service throughout the entire process. They offer home protection, covering your floors, banisters, railings, door jams, even the doors themselves. And they are always upping the game when it comes to mover training. This company, TriStar Moving, is on the rise. I saw a TriStar Moving truck just yesterday driving around the street. And I remember how they started off so small. They are blowing up because of the standards that Garrett and Robert hold. So if you're looking to move, give my friends at TriStar Moving a call, 615-640-1219, or visit their website, nashvillemoving.org/radio, where they'll give you 5% off your entire move. That's TriStar Moving, 615-640-1219, nashvillemoving.org/radio. Tell them Jared Stillman sent you 5% off your entire move. TriStar Moving, my official movers.